This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Ready? Let's go. Give me a vacation.
Vacation!
Give me a golf course.
70 courses!
Let's get a water sport.
Paddleboarding!
Can I get excursions?
Whale watching!
Time for chill vibes.
Beach yoga!
How about a garden tour?
Balboa Park!
Give me a dolphin. What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Savor, a production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we have an episode for you about onigiri.
Oh, so many cravings.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Very intense and specific cravings I am having right now.
Yes. And this episode happened to be like perfect timing for me. It was a suggestion from you. Did you have any like any impetus behind it, or was it just like,
oh, this is one that's been on our suggestion list for an untold amount of time.
Yes, untold. There's no way of knowing. eons ago.
Since the beginning of time.
Yes. Well, as it should be. Okay, so I have so much nori right now. Like,
oh, yeah?
An embarrassing amount because it was the only amount I could get. I needed it for some recipe I was doing. That was very delicious. But now I have a ton of it.
Sure.
And so I've been trying to find recipes on how to use it. And through that, I have found a lot of onigiri recipes. And at first, I thought, you know, I'm a little rice phobic. I'm a little scared of cooking with rice. And I've just always assumed this would be too difficult for me. But reading through the research, I feel confident. And I'm going to give it a go. And in fact, I want to do a whole, like, I want to do some pan-fried versions, non-pan-fried versions. I want to do a whole spread.
Yeah. It is one of the things that, like, you might as well make a lot if you're making it. Because, like, once you get molding, just kind of keep going, you know?
Well, that's the plan, Lauren. That's the plan. Yeah. I hope it's not a disaster. I'm a little
nervous. Oh, no.
And this episode did bring back many fond memories of our time in Hawaii.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. One of the things, like, we like landed and got to our hotel in Waikiki and realized that one piece of our luggage was still at the airport. And so we just had this cool, like, and also like our rooms weren't ready. So like we just had this like cool stretch of maybe an hour where we were sitting out on the patio of this hotel. And we were right across the street from, I think it was a 7-Eleven. And I ran across and just grabbed like a bunch of like musubi and onigiri and drinks and just, and there was like a brief, beautiful rainstorm. And it was like the act of sitting on this hotel patio, eating convenience store snacks was so lovely.
It was. Yeah, it was like a really special moment where we're like, oh, we got to enjoy that time with each other.
Yeah.
With these foods and just, yeah, it was really lovely.
It was.
For this one, you can see our rice episode, which still, like, I remember how much it broke my brain, but yeah, you can see that one. And also our donut episode, surprisingly.
That's because of stuff we mentioned in our Pokemon episode, and we'll get into more later on, but yes.
Yes, yes. You seriously never know where the research is going to take you.
Never.
Okay, so I guess this brings us to our question.
Sure.
Onigiri. What is it?
Well, onigiri are a category of handheld food items that can be a lot of things, but at base are cooked rice and some kind of seasoning and or filling packed firmish into a ball or triangle or maybe kind of like a puck so that you can pick it up, yeah, often partially wrapped in nori, which are dried paper-like sheets made of seaweed. Onigiri are almost always savory. They can be served warm or room temperature or cool. They can be a snack or part of a meal or like a whole meal unto themselves. They're like a hearty tea sandwich, but with rice instead of bread. Mm-hmm. They're like less fatty arancini.
Okay. Yeah.
They're like a dumpling made of grains of rice is saying to you, it's not safe to go alone. Bring me.
Aww.
Yeah.
Always. It does feel, it does kind of have that vibe of like, I don't know. It kind of reminds me of my mom when she's like, you've got to, what if you don't have enough food? What if you don't have enough snacks? Take this.
Yeah.
Because it's so easily portable and pretty filling. Yeah.
Yeah.
I get that vibe.
The rice in question is usually like regular old steamed white rice, not sticky glutinous rice usually, though you can use that. The rice is seasoned with anything from a little bit of salt to like a blend of more complex things like sesame seeds and dried fish flake and flakes of nori. Maybe some other herbs or spices like shiso leaf or bits of dried veg. You can also mix in more substantial ingredients to the rice, like cooked red beans or different grains like barley. Or you could use like a pan-fried rice with bits of cooked veg in it if you wanted to. In some cases, generally when you have not mixed anything in with the rice will be pressed around a filling of some kind, usually a chopped filling, so it's kind of easy to bite into. Something like cooked or preserved seafood or meat, sometimes dressed in a sauce, sometimes just plain, or pickled fruit or vegetables, for example, umeboshi, which are tart, salted, pickled plums. One of my favorite things, very strong in flavor. Real weird. If you've never experienced them, I want you to, and I'm sorry.
Yeah, I believe when we went to that big mall where I felt like on this Hawaii trip where I felt kind of like all of y'all's moms where you're like, please, Annie, can we go to these toys? Like, you immediately saw one with umeboshi in it and you were like, we're getting it. You have
That's
to try it.
That's it. Yeah. Yes.
And it was delicious. I loved it. Very weird though, yes.
I think they're great. I don't think there's a lot of things in American cuisine that have the same combination of both very tart and very salty. So it can be a little bit startling, but but in a way that I love. Anyway, that's an option. Also cooked vegetables like mushroom or sweet potato might be used as a filling, or just like a dollop of miso paste. Any kind of filling goes, really. So you take your rice and your filling, and you hand pack this thing into whatever shape it is that you're going for. Or you can use a mold if you want to. And then because even non-sticky rice is like a little sticky to the touch, you usually apply a partial wrapper, sort of like a handle of nori. Nori is definitely a whole other episode unto itself, but very basically, this is a product wherein seaweed is pulped and pressed into thin sheets, like you would do to wood to make paper. And then those sheets are roasted dry, yielding something that will like break and crumble on its own, but has a little bit of a chew to it when it's wettened. And it's got this savory, vegetal, kind of toasty, roasty flavor. So what you get when you apply this to onigiri, when you take a fresh sheet and apply it and serve it immediately, it's almost like a paper-thin crunch wrap.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I'm using Taco Bell. Yeah, as,
I love it. Got it.
As a ground reference here, but hopefully y'all understand what I'm talking about. if you let the onigiri sit a while, then the nori will moisten from the rice and attain this sort of snap and chew, almost like a sausage casing. Some people really dislike that and want it to be super fresh. I don't mind it either way. Not that I want you to have as many preferences as you want to have. We like a strong preference here.
We do. We do indeed. Yeah.
This is one case where I'm like, I want to eat the food. Yes. I would like to eat it. I don't care. At any rate, you can also, instead of nori, use other edible wrappings, different leafy green vegetables or herbs to preference. Shiso leaf is another one that shows up sometimes, or a type of mustard greens, or maybe like a steamed cabbage kind of situation. Or instead of doing any of those things, or maybe in addition, you can take your shaped onigiri, just the rice, and grill it or griddle it so that it gets this crisp golden crust, sort of like the pan crust on paella or bibimbap.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so good. Mm-hmm. Whew. Those are called yaki onigiri because yaki is a word for cooked, basically. And you can make onigiri at home, but they are also a very popular to-go convenience food and a common snack at bars and restaurants. If you make them at home, you can get molds in the kind of like standard, like triangular or circular shapes, or in all kinds of cutesy, silly shapes for lunchboxes, like panda faces or whatever. Bento culture, bento being a word for this kind of like fancified lunchbox situation, is a whole thing, also a whole other episode.
Yes. Oh, I can't wait to do that. But I did. That's the rabbit hole for the episode. Look up these shapes. And I found like a soccer ball mold you can buy.
Oh,
I
yeah.
didn't. Okay. But I thought about it.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know why I would need it. But
and all kinds of co-branded things. I mean, like if you need your own onigiri to look like Hello Kitty's face, like that's a thing. Anyway. Yes. The onigiri sold in convenience stores these days are packaged really ingeniously with this double layer of cellophane-type plastic. And the outer one, you know, keeps like the whole thing sanitary, but there's this clever inner one that keeps the nori separate from the rice, but pulls away easily so that when you unwrap it, that's the first time that the nori touches the rice. So the nori stays crisp until you eat it.
Oh, that's fantastic. I read about that and I was like, I could envision it. But that is pretty cool.
That the first time they definitely had that in the ones that we bought in Hawaii.
Nice.
And goodness. Mm-hmm. I hate it when I'm like, I want to go to a 7-Eleven. Like, I know. What? So silly.
Oh, I don't think it's silly at all, Lauren.
What I'm really missing right now is there's a few izakayas around town, like Japanese like pubs around town that I haven't been to in a long time because of the pandemic, and I really, really, really miss them.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yes. Well, maybe if my experiments aren't a disaster, I'll bring some to the next D&D session.
Okay. Maybe. All right.
Okay. It'll be fine. Well, what about the nutrition?
Oh, it depends on how you make them, you know. It's a ball of rice at the end of the day. Like, it's kind of carb heavy. But it can have a good boost of protein to it, depending on what else you do there. You know, and they will fill you up. Can keep you going. You know, eat a vegetable, drink a water. Definitely drink a water. A lot of these are kind of salt bombs.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, I remember we took them to a beach in Maui. We, like, went to the store and we took them to the beach. And I remember eating just one and thinking, whoa, I'm so full.
Yeah. Those might have been musubi and, like, spam musubi, which are a very related category. Omusubi can be a synonym for onigiri, but generally the Hawaiian concept of musubi is a little bit more – A little bit different and specific, but at any rate, a large amount of rice.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, this is a snack? Like, it's
and it's like a large amount of packed rice, like dense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we don't have many numbers for you, but we do have a few.
Yeah. Not right here. There's a few more in the history part, but here at the top, just a couple.
Yes. According to Elizabeth Ondo, a scholar of Japanese culinary history and culture, 1.6 billion onigiri were sold in Japanese 7-Elevens in 2015.
Ooh.
That's a lot. And it came out to be about 12 onigiri per person on average that year.
I read that by 2019, that number was up to 2.3 billion.
Wow.
Yeah.
My mind is trying to grapple with this truth. Dang.
Yeah. It's, I can see why.
Yeah. Well, you know, clearly they're popular.
Yes.
And there's a history onto how and why they have become so popular.
Absolutely. And we are going to get into that history right after we get back from a quick break for a word from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us.
Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow, thank God for deliverance.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
So this one's going to be a bit of fun with Japanese pronunciations, but Lauren's going to help me out.
I'll see what I can do. It's been a hot minute since I was in college taking Japanese language classes, but... We'll see if we can not butcher anything.
I think we can do it.
Okay.
I felt pretty confident, and then I just looked down at something I wrote. I was like, oh no.
Oh dear.
But we're going to, I think we can do this.
Okay.
And again, see our rice episode for more information on rice. But for our purposes in this episode, historians think that rice was introduced to Japan around 6,000 BCE, and by about 3,000 BCE, rice cultivation had spread through much of the country. And in fact, there's a whole thing about, like, when red rice was popular, when grains of black rice was popular, and it's too much, but just know...
You
can find the information should you desire.
Yeah, and we can. I feel like we're giving ourselves so much homework this episode.
I know,
but right, we can do so many different episodes about all these specific types of rice, and it would be fascinating and horrifying. Horrifying from a reading point of view. Just like there's a lot of intricacies here, and it's really cool.
It is,
but a lot.
Indeed. Quite a lot. But for this episode, while the word onigiri can be traced back to 15th century Japan, most experts looking into these portable rice balls believe that they go back much further, perhaps as far back as the 6th century, and perhaps even further. I'll get to that in a second. When a similar item went by a different name, tonjiki. On top of that, a 721 CE book made mention of nigiri-i.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. which meant folks in that area were making rice balls by then. And another book published around the same time seems to make mention of them too. The context seemingly that the rich would feed this item to their servants and farm workers, both as a convenience item for the workday, but also as a gift. And, as with many episodes, this is an ongoing confusion. They were called by so many different names. And it's sort of hard to trace and know exactly what they were. But it seems like kind of this rice ball, perhaps with protein, has been historically these things we're mentioning was there. Like it was there.
Yeah. Not by the same name, but right. Mm-hmm. The culture of making and eating these things goes way back.
Indeed. A 12th century wood carving seems to feature something resembling onigiri. And yeah, also, as with all of our topics, there are a couple of theories and explanations surrounding onigiri. One popular reasoning or story behind it believes that they originated as a convenient way to feed traveling soldiers sometime between 794 and 1192. Acting as a sort of preservative. Others suggest that nobles would sometimes give peasants who lingered just outside of their gates rice balls. During a rebellion that happened in 1200 CE, up to 200,000 onigiri were distributed for soldiers, and rice balls have continually provided sustenance for Japanese soldiers during conflicts. That's been a thread throughout. The name onigiri came out of 15th century Japanese banquets, not to describe something eaten by those attending, but instead of food that used up leftovers while feeding the servants after the banquet was over. So these early onigiri usually contained a bit of protein like seafood or small scraps of meat combined with whatever rice and or other grains that was left over from this banquet. They were designed specifically so that they could be eaten by hand, no chopsticks required, and they may have also been wrapped in bamboo leaves and heated. Onigiri were popular for workers during huge construction projects during the 1800s, and they were not infrequently depicted in art, which I love. We love some good food art around here.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is also around the time people started wrapping their onigiri in nori, as opposed to the bamboo leaves, though historians, from what I read, aren't precisely sure why. And yes, I cannot wait to do a nori seaweed episode.
Yeah.
I'm so excited to look into it because my package contains kind of a sinister warning. So I'm like, ooh.
Oh.
I cannot wait to learn more about that.
Okay. All right.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes these rice balls were coated in something like miso and baked, and sometimes hot tea was poured over them, from what I read, which I'm also really interested in.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, too, rice was fairly accessible to the average person, which was not always the case in Japan, has not always been the case. And further, this is around the time when rice balls started becoming key in bento boxes. Yes. Also want to learn more about that.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a snippet about onigiri published around that time. In this life, the palm is dipped in salt water and held in the hand. Although there is no fixed shape in the three capitals, in Kyoto and Osaka, there are some that are made in the shape of a bale with a little black sesame seed sprinkled on the surface. In Edo, most of them are round or triangular, about 1 inch and 5 minutes in diameter and 5 or 6 minutes thick. Sesame seeds are rarely used. Many of them are held in a bowl and roasted afterwards. There's a lot of legends about the shape, which I love also. I don't know. It makes me happy when I learn about these kind of regional differences and why people do make it the way they make it, where they do. But the shape has definitely been part of it, which I very much enjoy.
Yeah.
Onigiri were a part of some of the first school lunches for Japanese impoverished children in the late 19th century. But though they have this history of being an item of humility, something for the less well-off, by this time, pretty much everyone ate them for all sorts of occasions, from everyday lunches to celebrations. In 1974, the first 7-Eleven opened in Japan, and they offered onigiri. And this was kind of a change-up of the idea that you had to make them at home. Like, now you could just buy them at a convenience store super easily.
Yeah.
And there was a fascinating article I read about 7-Eleven and technology around onigiri to, like, make this happen, which is really cool. 7-Eleven might be a fun episode, too. Oh, no, I'm giving us so much stuff to do.
No, but absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And this is cool. Okay, so a blackened cone-shaped item was uncovered at an archaeological site in Japan in 1987. And this item is believed to be the oldest known rice ball, believed to date back to the first century CE. Similar items called zongzi-shaped carbonized rice balls have been found around the area, some containing coins inside of them. And experts looking into it think that they have these, like, finger-shaped indents, suggesting that people ate them just like we eat them today with their hands.
Oh, well.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Yeah.
It's a pretty flawless design, I mean.
True. Truth. But that, like, going back to what I said earlier when I made mention of, like, 6th century CE is sort of when a lot of people said onigiri, that's when it started. This, to me, suggests it's even older than that.
It's even older, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But now let's talk about donuts. So we have mentioned this in a couple of episodes, but we got to mention it again because it cracks me up every time. So in 1997-ish, an episode of the Pokemon series aired in America, and it called onigiri jelly donuts.
Yeah.
Because they didn't think American audiences would know what onigiri or rice balls were. So, like, this character was like, oh, these are so good, these jelly donuts. But it was onigiri.
It was clearly onigiri.
Yes. Yep. And it has become a popular meme. Very, very popular. And you can find recipes for Brock's jelly donuts, sort of jokingly, but also Brock's onigiri.
Yes.
From this episode. Yes. Oh gosh, I love it. I was reading some of the memes yesterday when I was researching this. It's funny.
As I said in our Pokemon episode, like, it is a very funny sequence in the American dub, because it's just like they are holding these absolutely savory rice balls. Yep. That have a filling in them that is not jelly.
Right.
They are not donuts and the filling is not jelly. And everyone says the phrase jelly donuts like 20 times. And it's just increasingly surreal every single time it happens. It's high quality.
Yep. Recommend if you haven't seen it. After the March 2011 tsunami, earthquake, and nuclear disaster in Japan, onigiri became an instrumental source of comfort and food for survivors because, yeah, again, they're easy to transport, easy to hand out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In 2013, Japanese developer CyberStep released its MMORPG by the name of Onigiri, which later spawned an anime series. I have no idea what it's about. No idea.
No idea. Listeners, write in. You're our only hope. We can't search.
Yeah.
It. You have to let us know.
Then I think in 2014, a nonprofit group out of Japan called Table for Two started up this yearly onigiri action campaign. And it runs in October-ish of every year and raises awareness and funds for the United Nations World Food Day. And this campaign specifically encourages people to make onigiri and post pictures of onigiri. And they chose this food as a symbol for this campaign because it's like homey and comforting and sustaining. They partner with sponsors to provide school lunches for every picture that gets posted. They sometimes call it the 1 million itadakimasu campaign. Itadakimasu being like a phrase of gratitude that you say before you dig into a meal. In 2019, they received over 295,000 pictures of onigiri.
Wow.
And donated over 1,600,000 meals, feeding 8,000 school kids for a whole year.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's impressive.
Oh, love it. In 2019, 7-Eleven switched to a bioplastic cellophane wrapper for their onigiri. Reducing its plastic use by 260 tons a year.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. In 2022, Watanabe and Samuel Truffaut. Now the French is tripping me up.
No.
Their restaurant is located in Paris, but I don't believe he's actually French. But anyway, whatever. They published their book called Onigiri. And I think it has 36... onigiri recipes?
I believe that's correct. I was looking into it. Yeah, yeah. It's a recipe book. It seems quite dear. Really nice.
It does. It does. Maybe I should look into it for my grand experiment I'm about to embark on.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, gosh. And I also got a bunch of furikakes to try, like a bunch of different ones.
Ooh. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Right, because I think a listener sent in a whole bunch of different things. And, oh, that's amazing. Gosh. Sorry, I just stopped talking because I was thinking about rice.
Yep. That's about where I am, too. It's exciting. Frightening
it
and
is.
Exciting all at once.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes. Well, oh, the cravings. I think that's what we have to say about onigiri for now.
It is. We do have some listener mail for you. But first, we've got one more quick break for a word from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressing, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s.
She looked like a million bucks.
With zero qualifications.
She had a Harvard plaque.
Tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. That this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with
Listener Mail. Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
it is like that.
It is, right? It is. Yeah. Oh, gosh. I'm so excited to make it. I'm scared, but I'm excited. But, oh, okay.
Okay. Okay. All right.
Bart wrote, I always squeal a little inside when a new episode of Savor appears in my podcast app. But that goes double when you cover one of my passion foods. I'm in IT, and I joke that I'm a machine for turning caffeine into code. I have strong opinions on all forms of caffeine. European Coke is just better. But coffee is the king of my caffeine hill, and espresso is the pinnacle of coffee. My test for any new coffee place is a black espresso. If that's good, they have good coffee. If not, move on. Anyway, I'm a picky guy when it comes to my coffee, and the perfect cup for me is equal parts espresso and water, black. A pure espresso is a little too strong for my taste, and an Americano, much too weak. I struggled for ages to find a name for this perfect drink. Much Googling later, I found it. Cafe Zorro. How cool is that? Huh. Sadly, almost no barista has ever heard of it, though, so it doesn't actually solve my problem of easily ordering my perfect coffee. For now, I've settled on an extremely short Americano, like halfway up a flat white cup. I mean, that does sound good to me. You know we love these strong preferences.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've never tried a drink like that. I dislike Americanos. I feel like they get really bitter when you add that much water to them for some reason. Or like, I don't know, like I are bitter in a bad way, which I never say. So but maybe I should try this.
It sounds good to me. Cafe Zorro is a great name. So I'm in on that. But also more memories of Hawaii. I remember when we talked to Dr. Coffee, Sean Simon, he was like, I think he did the same thing. Like, we got to try the espresso.
If that's good, we can hang.
Yeah. And we all got the espresso. I think one person didn't get it, but everybody else, we were like, we'll do what you say, sir. We'll follow your lead. Yeah, it was good. It was delicious.
Oh, it was good. Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. Espresso, just like black espresso, is my pinnacle of coffee as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Caitlin wrote, I never responded to you a year plus ago after you actually did the oatmeal episode. Oh my goodness, I was so happy and shocked and all the good feelings. Thank you so much. You'll never believe the timing of the oatmeal episode. The weekend after that episode dropped, I was actually helping my younger sister, who's a total badass, move from South Carolina to, wait for it, Hershey, Pennsylvania. I got to spend the weekend with one of my favorite people listening to one of my favorite podcasts. It was great. My sister is a food science / safety wizard and is part of the Mammoth system that keeps our food safe to eat. I'm in awe of how amazing she is every day, and I'm so proud of her, so I wanted to take this opportunity to brag. In a complete non sequitur, I wanted to share that my husband and I also live in Atlanta, and I get super excited whenever we get a hometown shout-out. We're in the Decatur area. Oh, hi. So Homegrown, Farm Burger, and Raging Burrito all have our hearts. Keep the local suggestions coming. I can't wait to try the Szechuan place you recommended several episodes ago, which brings me to another amazing lady I want to brag on. My sister-in-law, Emily Golub, I think that would be how you'd say it. Let me know. Founded and operates the local meal kit delivery service, Garnish and Gather, right here in Atlanta. If you've ever got an itch to do a meal kit delivery service episode, Emily would be an amazing candidate for an interview. She works closely with local farmers and is well plugged into the Atlanta food scene. She does it all while looking flawless and raising three children. Seriously, she's a superwoman. I'll end with a bit of life news. My cornbread-less husband and I are expecting our first child. We decided we had had enough relaxing Saturday mornings during the pandemic, so we thought we'd ruin that forever. It has been so, so interesting exploring what I, as a pregnant foodie, cannot eat and why. In talking with my mother and mother-in-law, they've commented how there's just so much more to think about now than there used to be. They didn't even have to think about sushi in the 80s. What was kombucha? Soft cheese is or is not okay. No coffee or 200 milligrams. One glass of wine a day or don't even sniff it. Go back even further and you get even weirder suggestions, like that wine is good for the baby, raw meat is good for something, an episode on the history of what is suggested to eat during pregnancy by the prevalent medical knowledge of the day would be fascinating and probably mildly horrifying. I know it's slightly out of your wheelhouse, per the Saver motto, always check with your medical professional, but heck, would it be interesting. Just be warned, when you dip your toe into anything pregnancy-related, that you're wading into a pool of judgment. Everyone has an opinion, so caveat the heck out of it, gird your inbox, and hide your women and children, literally.
That is a winning argument, Caitlin. Oh, be terrified, goodness. But do it. No, that's...
Gird your inbox.
It's true. You are very correct. That it would be fascinating.
Yeah.
Because even me, someone who's never been pregnant, but I've had pregnant friends, I've just heard them be like, I've heard I can't use the microwave, but then like all these things. I'm like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Also, congratulations.
Yes, congratulations, though. I'm sorry that you're wading through this pool of judgment right now.
Yes.
Oh, but that's very exciting. Oh, and thank you so much for telling us about your sister's job. Sounds completely amazing. And thank you to her for her work. And thanks for shouting out your friend. I haven't tried Garnish and Gather, but I've got friends who have tried it and have really enjoyed it. So
I tried it after we did our beets episode, I think, because I really wanted to try fresh beets and I couldn't find them in my local store. So I was like desperately searching. They had some. And it was delightful. Okay. I got a bunch of stuff.
Cool.
But yeah, that was pretty great. And yeah, as always, we love shouting out local Atlanta things.
Oh, yeah.
Meal kit has been on our list for a long time.
Hoofda.
Which if you didn't pick up on it, listeners, the oatmeal comment at the top is because Caitlin requested oatmeal a year before we actually got to it. So again, we do have a list. We will get to it, but it might be a year.
Or more. You know?
Yeah. I mean, it's things like this, like you said, the... like pregnancy foods, that's going to be a big one. Some of them are just intimidating.
Absolutely.
But I am fascinated and very curious.
Yeah. And doing it like I try to I really try to stray away from giving out medical advice on this show because we are not medical professionals. Mm-mm. And so it can be so tricky getting into, you know, like we've got a few episodes like that in our idea sphere, like sports nutrition, specifically running nutrition. Runners have a lot of very specific ideas about what to do and what not to do, and most of it seems to be contradictory. And things like that. But going at it from a historical angle is always super fascinating because, right, just like going back in time and talking about what the medical establishment did and didn't know about human biology, especially where it relates to women.
Oh, yes.
Super fascinating.
And also, it always makes me think of like the 100 years from now, podcasters version of us, the 100 years in the future, Annie and Lauren, they're going to be like, what did they think? What? Right. That's not correct.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Well, we will add it to our list.
Yes.
Yes. In the meantime, thanks so much to both of those listeners for writing to us. If you would like to write to us, you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
We are also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @SaverPod. And we do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.